Today, what does it mean for America that Donald Trump is refusing to concede? On Friday, Donald Trump said the words,
"Whatever happens in the future, who knows which administration it will be? I guess time will tell."
Some said it sounded almost like he might be edging towards a concession. I stress, almost. Over the next 3 days, Trump made clear exactly where he stands, cheering what he said were tens of thousands of his supporters protesting in Washington, D.C.
Washington for nothing. We stand up and fight for what we want. And we want Trump in the White House.
And firing out tweets from mail-in elections are a sick joke to I won the election and I concede nothing. It's an outpouring that Joe Biden has described as an embarrassment.
How can I say this tactfully? I think it will not help the president's legacy.
From The Guardian, I'm Anushka Astana. Today in Focus, what will it take for Donald Trump to concede? Lawrence Douglas, you're a Guardian contributor and a law professor at Amherst College, and I spoke to you a few weeks ago on Today in Focus. Can I play back a clip from our conversation?
By all means. Many more Trump supporters will be voting in person on November 3rd, and many more Biden supporters will be voting by mail-in ballots, which might not be counted until days or even weeks after the election. We could easily imagine Trump having a lead on November 3rd. And what I really think his strategy is to try to leverage whatever lead he has on November 3rd into a claim that he's been reelected, and then to try to discredit this so-called blue shift, this shift in overall voting towards the Democrats, towards Biden, once the mail-in ballots start to be counted. He'll try to discredit that as the product of a fraud.
Are you impressed with your psychic abilities hearing that back?
Well, a number of years ago, my wife, as a present, got me a crystal ball, and I've been using it pretty religiously. So, yes. Yes, exactly.
Ever since then, I've been thinking hard about it because, to be honest, when we spoke, you set out this pretty alarming picture of how the election night and beyond might unfold, from the red mirage and Trump demanding a result on the night to the blue shift and the slow count towards a Biden victory. And even so, even though I knew it was coming, it was strange to watch. And you still kind of went on the emotional roller coaster with everyone else. And then you said, at the end of it, Trump won't concede. And if I'm honest, Lawrence, I thought that was a crazy idea. I mean, the idea that a president wouldn't accept an election result when it was there in front of him still seemed just too out there for me. Presumably you're not surprised.
Yeah, I suppose I'd put it this way. I guess I'm shocked, but unsurprised. So I think you're right. I mean, it is obviously shocking for a sitting president in the White House to refuse to concede. That's something that we're more used to hearing from, let's say, Minsk than from Washington, D.C. But again, it's unsurprising. It's unsurprising because the president, whatever else we might say about him, he's not a particularly cryptic character. I mean, he's pretty transparent in telegraphing what he's going to do. So I just kind of took him at word.
You listened to him?
Yeah.
Lawrence, if we look at what has happened since election night, Donald Trump has reeled off countless tweets alleging fraud, which Twitter has been flagging as misinformation. He has rarely appeared in public, but he did come out without any evidence to say,
"If you count the legal votes, I easily win. If you count the illegal votes, they can try to steal the election from us. If you count the votes that came in late, we were winning in all the key locations by a lot, actually. And then our numbers started miraculously getting whittled away in secret.
And that the election is being stolen. Some U.S. networks decided to cut away from him saying this.
Iowa, Indiana, Ohio.
Okay, here we are again in the unusual position of not only interrupting the President of the United States, but correcting the President of the United States. And Ari Melber, don't go far, given that you are our chief legal correspondent. There are no illegal votes that we know of. There has been no Trump victory that we know of.
Even Fox News cut away from his team making claims of fraud, including his press secretary.
We want every legal vote to be counted, and we want every illegal vote to
well,
be...
Well, I just think we have to be very clear. She's charging, the other side is welcoming fraud and welcoming illegal voting. Unless she has more details to back that up, I can't in good countenance continue showing you this. I want to make...
However, some of his more ardent supporters on that network are giving their full-throated support.
First, tonight, many Americans do not believe that this election was fair. And make no mistake, every American has a right to feel that way. I feel that way. It's a corrupt and an embarrassing disgrace. We, you, the American people, deserve more. We are capable of so much more.
It's all pretty jaw-dropping, but the moment that really floored me was watching the Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, the most senior person in Trump's cabinet, say...
There will be a smooth transition to a second Trump administration. All right, we're ready.
There'll be a smooth transition to a second Trump administration. Now, there was a smirk on his face, but still. Just speaking as an American, how does that make you feel?
It makes me feel that I should be looking into getting dual citizenship to another country. As you point out, you know, Mike Pompeo, he did kind of like chuckle. He had a smirk on his face. But, you know, if this is his idea of humor, we make jokes about the peaceful transfer of power. Well, you really got to question his fitness as Secretary of State. Yeah, the whole thing as an American, it's extremely appalling. I just don't think that there's any precedent for this in American history. We've never had a president engaging in this kind of constitutional brinkmanship.
And in practical terms, that means that Joe Biden is not being given any of the transition support a president-elect would normally get, including access to classified intelligence briefings. Beyond that, Trump has taken the very unusual step of firing his defense secretary, Mark Esper, and his administration has also carried out sweeping changes at the top of the Defense Department, removing several of the most senior officials and replacing them with Trump loyalists, which has caused quite a lot of alarm. What is going on there and how worrying is it?
Well, let's give it the best possible explanation. And the best possible explanation is that we know that Donald Trump is a deeply spiteful person who likes to fire people who express any kind of independence and likes to replace them with toadies, with loyalists. That's the best explanation. And the worst explanation, I suppose, is if there were, let's say, in the coming weeks between now and January 20th, some kind of civil unrest. We know that going all the way back to Lafayette Square, that's when he staged his little photo opportunity holding the Bible in front of St. John's Church in Washington, D.C.
Stay Bible. We have a great country. That's my thoughts.
We know that at the time he was willing to use this so-called Insurrection Act of 1807 to put federal troops on the street. And it was only Defense Secretary Mark Esper who cautioned against that and actually publicly expressed the radical notion that that wasn't a particularly good idea.
The option to use active duty forces in a law enforcement role should only be used as a matter of last resort and only in the most urgent and dire of situations. We are not in one of those situations now. I do not support invoking the Insurrection Act.
And that apparently is what earned Esper Donald Trump's enmity. So, you know, it's also possible that Trump is planning to be more aggressive in invoking extraordinary presidential powers.
While he's putting loyalists in the Defense Department, he's already got loyal people in a number of other departments, perhaps most significantly the Department of Justice, led by Attorney General Bill Barr. Before the election, Barr was talking up the possibility of widespread voter fraud.
Elections that have been held with mail have found substantial fraud and coercion.
As far as widespread fraud, we haven't seen that since...
We haven't had the kind of widespread use of mail-in ballots that's being proposed. We've had absentee ballots from people who request them from a specific address. Now what we're talking about is mailing them to everyone on the voter list when everyone knows those voter lists are inaccurate. People trying to change the rules to this methodology, which as a matter of logic is very open to fraud and coercion, is reckless and dangerous. And the people are playing with fire.
And has now launched an investigation into voting irregularities.
Attorney General Bill Barr says federal prosecutors are authorized to investigate allegations of voter fraud. Barr's action will allow attorneys to work around Justice Department policy that would normally prohibit investigations before the election has been certified.
This, along with everything else we've discussed, and particularly those moves in defense, have led some people in the media to claim that Donald Trump is attempting to stage a coup.
Your new piece for Slate is titled "The Real Threat of Trump's Ridiculous Coup Attempt."
A coup is underway, and the number of participants is not shrinking, but growing.
You wrote, "What Donald Trump is attempting to do has a name, coup d'etat."
Is that over the top?
I certainly hope it's over the top. The reason I remain hopeful that it's over the top is not because I have any kind of residual trust in Donald Trump. You know, I do think he clearly has these autocratic instincts. I don't think that the military would go along with a attempted coup. One thing that, again, is a little bit reassuring is Donald Trump seems to be reviled by senior members of the military. He also seems to be distrusted and reviled by senior members of the intelligence community. And even though he does have this staunch loyalist in the person of Bill Barr presiding over the Justice Department, I think it's fair to say that there are thousands of career lawyers in the Justice Department who believe Donald Trump is an absolute disgrace. So I do think that there is, you know, sufficient institutional obstacles that would place brakes on any, you know, attempt to stage a coup.
Presumably, first and foremost, it relies on what he is claiming has gone wrong. What are the allegations about the election?
The allegation is that the election was rigged in the sense that there was a systematic fraud that robbed Donald Trump of his victory.
And is there any evidence to support it?
I guess it's fair to describe it as non-existent. It seems like these various legal challenges are meritless, they are frivolous, and it's exceptionally unlikely that they could have any kind of material impact on the outcome of the election.
What about the people who they constantly bring up to the camera to say, you know, I saw votes not being counted here, there, or anywhere? Has anyone investigated them?
Everything that I've seen suggests that the allegations are either based on hearsay, that is, I didn't see this directly, but someone told me that this has happened. It's also possible that there are isolated incidents. No election is entirely free of fraud, but I think one of the things that actually we can say with great confidence is this election ran very smoothly. It was a smooth and fair election. And many people had great concerns about how this election would unfold against the backdrop of a global pandemic. We can be, you know, really quite proud about the way in which the election ran very, very smoothly and fairly.
Okay, a complete lack of evidence isn't a great starting point for a legal case, but what is the legal process if the president was to start to go through it?
Well, you bring a suit and then the suit's dismissed. And then you appeal the dismissal of the suit, and then the appeal of the dismissal of the suit is dismissed, and then you appeal the dismissal of the dismissal of the suit, and then that gets dismissed. And that basically is what he's doing. I mean, I suppose one could say that even if it will have no legal efficacy, it could have a political efficacy. And I say that in two respects. One, that it creates, at least in the short term, some kind of, you know, nominal justification for his refusal to concede. That is, he can say, look, I'm not going to concede until the legal process has run its course. And then as a second matter, which is, I think, the more disturbing thing, I think these lawsuits do serve, at least in the eyes of his supporters, to muddy the waters. That is, it permits him to at least cast this cloud of uncertainty over the results. So even if the lawsuits are dismissed, simply the fact that they're being brought gives legs to his conspiracy theories.
I know you've argued it's unlikely to reach the Supreme Court. And in just the past few days, Trump's legal teams have dropped cases in key states, Arizona and Pennsylvania, where legal arguments included things like poll watchers complaining they were being given mean looks. But if anything did get to the Supreme Court, should Democrats be worried? We know, of course, that one of the last things Trump did before the election was get through the appointment of Amy Coney Barrett as justice, dramatically shifting the balance in America's highest court to a 6-3 conservative majority. If a case did get there, could it have a big impact?
I would say two things. They wouldn't have the power to overturn the result. And I also think it's safe to say that Chief Justice John Roberts would bend over backwards to make sure that the Supreme Court wasn't seen as intervening in the election in a way that was throwing it in Donald Trump's direction. And I am confident that he would be able to muster the votes in order to avoid that type of incredibly self-destructive action on the part of the Supreme Court.
So if and when Trump has exhausted every possible method of challenging the result, which from what you're saying don't sound like they're likely to be very fruitful, and we reach the point of handover in January, I'm going to ask you your own question, Lawrence. Will he go?
Well, I think it's worth distinguishing between, you know, conceding defeat and submitting to defeat. So conceding defeat, I understand as an act in which the loser in election recognizes the legitimacy of their opponents of victory and congratulates them on a fair contest. And submitting to defeat, I think, is just kind of a real world recognition that further struggle is futile. So I do not imagine Donald Trump ever conceding. I simply don't think it's in his DNA to do so. I don't think it would serve him politically to do so. So I think that he will always insist that Biden's election was illegitimate and that his victory was stolen from him. That said, I do think that he will ultimately submit to defeat. That is, I can't imagine him, you know, barricading himself in the White House on January 20th, you know, and needing to be, you know, frog marched out of the White House by Secret Service agents. That I do not imagine happening.
Coming up, if Donald Trump is going to have to submit to defeat anyway, then what is he up to? Lawrence, it seems the word coup is perhaps not quite the right one to use here, but it does remain pretty alarming, particularly because this isn't just Donald Trump speaking. It's striking how many Republicans seem to be sticking with what the president has been doing. A handful have spoken out in the opposite direction. George W. Bush has congratulated Joe Biden. And former presidential candidate Mitt Romney has specifically said there is no evidence of fraud.
You know, I understand why the president wants to keep on fighting. I do believe, however, that it's destructive to the cause of democracy to suggest widespread fraud or corruption. There's just no evidence of that at this stage.
But many other prominent figures have not done this. Mitch McConnell, still the Senate Majority Leader.
The core principle here is not complicated. In the United States of America, all legal ballots must be counted. Any illegal ballots must not be counted. The process should be transparent or observable by all sides, and the courts are here to work through concerns. And President Trump is 100% within his rights to look into allegations of irregularities and weigh his legal options.
Picking his words carefully, to be fair, has essentially said Trump is within his right to challenge the result. And others like Lindsey Graham have actively backed him.
We will work with Biden if he wins, but okay. Trump has not lost. Do not concede, Mr. President. Fight hard.
What is going on?
Nothing good is going on. Again, it's kind of a piece of what we've seen over the last 4 years. Leading Republican lawmakers have aided and abetted Donald Trump's attack on the underbelly of American constitutional democracy. I guess maybe in the short term, people have speculated, and I guess I buy into the speculation that the Republican leadership is unwilling to do anything at this stage that could alienate the diehard Republican base, because they need that Republican base to turn out in numbers in these runoff elections in Georgia. Recall there are going to be these two runoff elections in Georgia, senatorial runoff elections in early January, which will decide the composition of the Senate. That is, whether the Senate remains in the hands of the Republicans. That's the best I can do to explain this egregious behavior on the part of leading Republican lawmakers.
And you're talking about Georgia, and obviously that is the most pressing thing right now. But in the slightly longer term and with eyes on 2024, do you think the Republican Party is looking at the 71 million people who voted for Donald Trump and thinking, our base has shifted and our base loves him and we can't afford to pull the rug out from under his feet?
Yes, I think that is absolutely true. And I think it's also one of the political purposes behind Trump's refusal to concede. You know, Trump is basically trying to propagate the myth that he's being forced from office precisely because he has kept faith with his base. To his base, he is told from the very beginning that the dark and nefarious forces of the deep state and the radical Democrats and the fake news have been conspiring against him and those who have elected him. And in defeat, his brand will remain kind of irresistible to his supporters. He has kept the faith with them, and he's being driven from office as a result of that. And if he can continue to command his base, even once he leaves the White House, you know, he'll continue to command his party. That leaves open the possibility that he's already floated of running again in 2024. Even if he doesn't actually run in 2024, just by holding out that possibility, he kind of remains the center of attention. And I think that is so critical for him to make sure that he is, you know, hogging the spotlight and crowding out the field for other Republicans. And so I do see that this refusal to concede has this genuine bad political motivation for Trump.
I guess because either he can be king again or at the very least kingmaker. How worried do you think he is about what might happen to him otherwise when he leaves the White House? How much is that what's driving him to want to remain there?
I do think he's ultimately going to submit to defeat. So he's going to have to recognize the fact that on January 20th, he is going to be an ordinary civilian, and then he's going to lose the immunity from prosecution, which has thus far insulated him during his time in office. Trump certainly faces the potential legal exposure, you know, even criminal indictment, because of either acts that he committed while the head of the Trump Corporation, that is before he took office. The Manhattan District Attorney, Cyrus Vance Jr., has been investigating the Trump Corporation for some time now. And there are also potentially things such as obstruction of justice that he engaged in during his time in office. Again, we start hearing these bizarre notions that he could arguably use the constitutional pardon power to pardon himself. That does not seem to be exactly what the framers had in mind when they created the pardon power. That would clearly raise all sorts of constitutional issues. You know, who knows? He could certainly try to do it. But even if he were to engage in that extraordinary act of self-pardoning, we need to recall that that would only extend to federal charges that could be brought against him. It could not extend to state charges. And those are arguably the most serious charges that he's facing.
Trump has denied any wrongdoing, and we should emphasize that no charges have been brought against him. Lawrence, from everything you're saying, it seems to me that Donald Trump's options are limited, even if he doesn't actually concede. But what does it mean for America and for democracy that the president is doing this? That he has the support of at least some Republicans and high-profile ones at that, and that potentially tens of millions of people will think that the election was stolen away from him?
Well, I suppose it's fair to say that it doesn't say anything all that healthy about the state of American democracy. And, you know, the thing that I really do worry is that even if Trump leaves the stage, Trumpism does not. And even as we already talked about, the very real possibility that Trump remains, again, if not the king, then the kingmaker in the Republican Party. That said, even though I'm a deeply pessimistic person, I'll try to find some optimistic note to end on. You know, we should bear in mind that Donald Trump lost decisively. He lost by over 5 million votes in the popular vote at present counting. That's a decisive loss. Very few incumbent presidents have been turned out after one term in office in American history. He has earned that dubious distinction as a member of that club. Obviously, Joe Biden has his work cut out from him, but he is a genuinely decent person who is deeply committed to American norms of constitutional democracy and to the project of healing. And whether he'll be successful in that, it's hard to say, but at least it's incredibly reassuring to have someone in the White House dedicated to that project rather than someone in the White House dedicated to a politics of division and teardown.
And just finally, you do seem to be someone who's pretty good at political predictions. So I'm going to ask you to get your crystal ball out once again. And I'm going to ask you one more prediction. When we finally get there, when we get to January the 20th and we get to the inauguration, do you think Donald Trump will be there?
Oh, that's an easy one. Donald Trump will not be there. I confidently predict that Donald Trump will boycott Joe Biden's election. And, you know, I even would kind of take a side bet that what Donald Trump will do is he will stage some kind of simultaneous event, some kind of big rally with his supporters. He could even engage in some kind of, you know, shambolic parallel inauguration. Again, not actually claiming to remain in office, but to remind those tens of millions of people with whom he has remained their faithful president that he is the legitimate leader of this country and only fraud stole his election out from under him.
Blimey. We end on another alarming note. Lawrence Douglas, thank you very much.
Oh, my pleasure. Sorry to end. I thought I was going to try to end on an optimistic note, but I guess it's just not within my character.
That was Lawrence Douglas, a law professor at Amherst College who writes for The Guardian. Do look up his comment pieces and check out his book, Will He Go? Trump and the Looming Election Meltdown in 2020. If you want to hear back to his mystic Meg powers, then do have a listen to our episode of Today in Focus with him during the campaign called What If Donald Trump Refuses to Concede? There is a lot of political news on this side of the Atlantic too, as Boris Johnson has lost his key vote leave aides from Downing Street and has been forced to self-isolate by track and trace. Follow it all on the brilliant Politics Live blog run by Andrew Sparrow. That's it for today. My thanks to Lawrence Douglas. This episode was produced by Josh Kelly and Elizabeth Cassin. Sound design was by Nicholas Cox. The executive producers are Phil Maynard and Nicole Jackson. We'll be back tomorrow. Has lost his key vote leave aides from Downing Street and has been forced to self-isolate by track and trace. Follow it all on the brilliant Politics Live blog run by Andrew Sparrow. That's it for today. My thanks to Lawrence Douglas. This episode was produced by Josh Kelly and Elizabeth Cassin. Sound design was by Nicholas Cox. The executive producers are Phil Maynard and Nicole Jackson. We'll be back tomorrow.